everybody. This is a Melrose Place. Today, episode is season 3, episode 23, Love and Death 101. And now, here are your hosts, Tari Ariano and Sarah D. Bundy. Goodbye forever.
Hi, Sarah.
Oh, hello, Tara, and once upon a time, Dave. I have news. Here it is. Again with this, episode 45, just for our Patreon supporters, drops April 30th. Let's watch Shannen Doherty in Gone in the Night, part 2,
woo!
In which we will continue our investigation into ripped from the true crime headlines / Hey, It's That Guy Works Progress Administration Project, Gone in the Night. Will Brenda find justice? Will Matt Fielding Sr. help her? Should we have watched the unsolved mysteries on this case instead? There's one way to find out, and that is to join us at patreon.com/againwiththis. The movie is on Amazon Prime, free with ads via its IMDb TV iteration, or to kibosh the commercials, you can rent it for a buck, or you can just leave the recapping to the professionals, i.e. us. Also coming this week, T-Bone.
Yes, also this week will be our April episode of Again With Them, in which we recap 90210 MG, Jenny Garth and Tori Spelling's podcast about 90210. That will be dropping on Thursday, April 29th, for our Patreon supporters at the $5 level and up. And I know in one of these episodes, their guest is the Darren Star. I hope he will tell them how to credit him properly, which is to say he did not write every episode of the fucking show, but I haven't, as of this recording, listened to it yet. So we'll find out, and so will you if you support us at the $5 level and up.
Yeah, this should bring us to close to the end of the first season, at which time, I hope, a lot of soul searching happens, not just at that podcast, but in the medium, like middle executive range of iHeartRadio. Choices can be unmade. That's all I'm going to say about that.
I think that's Pat. I think that brings us over the hump to season 2. Because this week was Spring Dance. And then I think the next one is the season finale. So.
Okay. Well, you could still. Remember I used to say about Trump, he could still die. I mean, you know, she could still quit.
Sarah.
Not us, though. We're in.
Anyway, that's patreon.com/againwiththis. Join us there. We have fun.
We do.
Now, for this episode, starting with our B plot, time to meet Jake's half-brother. Spoiler, because we see it in the credits, special appearance by Dan Cortez or Cortez. We are not sure. Please sound off in the comments. We tried to find out. We could not.
Cortese.
Yes. Cortese. Jake is at Shooters when he gets an apparently shocking phone call from someone named Sam. Sydney can tell it's a big deal and tries to get him to share it with her, but he stalks out first, telling her to shut up rather rudely. Yeah. That night, he is publicly brooding in the courtyard, waiting for someone he wants to talk to come by and ask him what's up, which Joe presently does. Turns out the Sam guy was someone he knew from Washington State, who is a lawyer now. Jake's mother has died. Sam was not sure how, and Jake is not sure he would want to know. The funeral's happening soon, in the town where she was living with the half-brother that Jake apparently never mentioned the entire time that he and Joe were dating, because she's like, you have a brother?
Yeah. Also with his plot with his dad?
Right.
And a question mark?
Well, right. Yeah. But it's his brother with the mom. Like, it's on the other side.
But still, but yes. Like, wouldn't that have... That he's like, I've got no one in this world.
Oh, yeah.
Except
right.
this guy. Right. And his Burger King stock.
Yeah. Anyway, Jake is not sure he wants to go to the funeral, so Joe offers to go with him, and he accepts. And Sydney, of course, walks in just in time to see the two of them hugging on it and gets all jealous about it. And then she asks Jake what they were talking about, and he apologizes for snapping at her earlier and tells her the truth. And she wants to go with him also, but Jake is like, you have to run the bar while I'm gone, though. And this makes her all pissy again. And he gets pissy back, saying he's not going to argue about it. Can she cover the bar or not? And she's like, yes. I mean, right?
Fine. Yeah.
So, I mean, she doesn't even say, like, do I get paid time and a half? Like, honestly.
Yeah.
It's kind of assuming a lot for someone who is, I mean, a server working for tips. Like, come on, dude. But anyway.
Well, and, you know, also, didn't you just rescue her from a cult? Like, that happened this month, right?
Yes.
After her friend Ricky broke all the shit in there and you probably didn't have insurance because you're Jake.
Right. Good point.
I'm just saying, business.
Yes. Like,
it's
fucking
endemic.
Hire an assistant manager, my dude. Like, everyone on this show. Get deputies. It's not that hard. But anyway.
No.
So then Jake and Joe are in the offices of Sam, Jake's lawyer friend, played by a slightly chubby baby Noah Emmerich.
So cute.
So young.
I mean, given that he's 6'3", it's cute.
Yes. And when I say baby, he's like 30, but still, like,
younger. Still. I will also note that Joe, in most of her scenes in this, like, whenever a Starverse show goes out of town to a place where, like, there's weather.
Yeah.
Which they have done. She is wearing this obviously extremely new Angelino idea of what people wear in cold weather, like anorak with a fur lined hood, which I don't hate it, but it's just like, it's like when, whenever David Silver is wearing ski wear that you're like, oh my God, like the tags are like audibly rubbing against the back of your neck. This is so dumb.
Yeah, like it's Washington. I mean, it's, you know, at this point, it's probably like March or April. Like, it's not that cold there. Come on, guys. But
yeah,
anyway.
Like just a slicker would work. And then Jake, of course, is wearing that like the shape that is no shape leather jacket from The Gap. That literally 2/3 of adult males owned. And some of them just never got rid of them. Like, I think Dan Brady still has one, so like somewhere in this house, and I keep being like, what is that thing? Is that a cat? Is that a shovel? Oh, right, it's the shapeless jacket. This has been Outerwear with Buncey.
So to Jake's question, Sam says that Jess, Jake's brother, has not really made any funeral arrangements and seems to not be handling this very well. Clip two.
See, your mom died after an argument with Jess, and he came back to the trailer later and found her. Now, Dr. Holloway said there's no way it was his fault. It was a hemorrhage, you know, a brain thing. But, well, you know Jess.
Yeah, I do.
I mean, there's just no talking to him.
Does he still have the gas station?
Uh-huh. But it's all but out of business. Does a little repair work. So.
Oh, okay. So he's Jake, but, like, less successful. Got it.
Does he park cars by the pool? Because I feel like he's already ahead, if not.
So Jake and Joe will go talk to Jess, and then they will deal with the funeral. And on their way out, Sam says it's nice to meet Joe. Jake always went with the prettiest girls, even in Washington. Which is like kind of a neg of Washington. Like, there are pretty girls there, dude. Take it easy. But anyway, Joe asks whether Jess took care of their mom for a long time, and Jake says it's more like he lived off her. Like, lived off what? What was she doing for money? It's weird.
Yeah, like, given the numerous lingering tracking shots of the trailer park in which she and Jess were living.
Yeah.
Yeah, not sure how spongy that sponging was getting, but sure.
Yeah. So then they drive their rental car to the service station where Jess is working on a car. He is, of course, played by one Mr. Dan C. And he is not friendly. Clip three.
Hey, Jess. Jake.
What are you doing here?
Oh, come on, what do you think I'm doing here?
I don't know. I mean, it couldn't be about Mom. Never gave a damn about her before.
This is my friend Joe. It's Jess. Joe came up to see if she could be some help. That's why I'm here. See if I could help.
Yeah, well, You're a little late, don't you think? I mean, you could have helped Mom when she went down to be with you, but instead you kicked her back up here so I'd have to take care of her.
Look, I'm not here to drag up the past, all right? And I talked to Sam, and I understand you feel responsible, but whatever happened with you and Mom...
Look, don't you say another word, little brother. Not a word! If anybody killed her, it was you, not me. You threw her out. And now you come up here after she dies with your girlfriend trying to show off and pretend like you have feelings for someone besides yourself. Well, I know it's a lie, Jake. Because I know you.
Believe it or not, I care about you. I just came up here to do what was right by Mom.
Then go back to California and leave us alone, huh?
Ooh!
This framing is so weird. It's like trying to make us forget that the last time we saw Jake's mother in California was like 7,000 episodes ago. Like it was season one.
Yeah. And if I recall correctly, we were pretty impressed that he set good boundaries with someone who had a substance abuse problem.
Yes. Like this lady was an adult. It's not like she was, I mean, she had an illness, arguably, with, you know, in terms of her addiction, but she was not disabled. Like she was responsible for herself. You could say neither of her sons was, you know, in charge of looking after her, probably.
Yeah. Also, you didn't exist back then. So what did you expect Jake to do? Honestly.
Yeah.
Like, you're like Dawn on Buffy. So give everybody a break.
Right. Like there was no mention of like, go back and live with Jess. Because we did not know you. You were not a factor, my dude.
Also, I mean, he's already a better actor than Andrew Hsu. Low
he
bar,
is.
I understand. But that doesn't mean he's good. It means he's better than Hsu.
He's also better looking. He has a real bad beard, but like the bone structure, I'm not mad at it.
Yeah, that styling is not my thing, but he is hotter than I remembered.
Mm-hmm. The cheekbones, it's like, got glass.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's a funeral.
They are related.
So then it's a funeral where everyone's getting restless, waiting for shit to start. Sam comes jogging up to say he found Jess in the trailer, but that he is upset, not coming. Jake wants to continue waiting, but Sam says they need to talk after the service. There's estate shit to deal with, and Jess is not handling it still. So they end up starting anyway. And afterward, Jake goes to the trailer to talk to him, asking Joe to wait in the car. And inside, Jess is in a rage and possibly also drunk, looking for their mother's jewelry box. Their grandmother's diamond ring was in it, and Jess accuses Jake of having gotten there first and taken it. And he comes at Jake, who easily shoves him away and onto the couch, flopping down next to him. And you'll see a picture in the visual aids of the two of them on the couch. They're both, the two of them are taking up like four men's worth of space. And I put this on Twitter when I cut it and just said, just because there's four guys worth of fabric in your pants does not mean you can take up four guys worth of space on the couch. And Dan C found it somehow and faved it. So tiny triumph. Good for him for having a sense of humor.
Huge
about
triumph.
Itself.
I mean, look, I think I had pants that big, like as much as I joke about the David Silver collection.
Mm-hmm.
They're not jokes. And this is how we had to live. Like you didn't have a toothpick gene. That was not possible.
No. Or a matchstick or even a boot cut. Like there was one size. It was giant.
Vast. Yes.
Anyway, I was very pleased when I saw that he had faved that. I was like, oh, hey, he's got a sense of humor. God bless him. Jake says he doesn't want anything. He just came to talk to Jess, whose resentment goes way back. Clip four.
You just got on that bike and you never looked back, did you? You didn't care that I was in this little hellhole of a town. You didn't care that my wife left me, took all my money, and I had to take care of our mother. Trying to keep a bottle out of her hands and men out of her pants. No, 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 no. See, Mr. Allstate was down in California with all the pretty girls. While I lived with Mommy in this tin can.
I'm sorry for what you're going through, and I understand that you're feeling some guilt about what happened to Mom.
Shut up! I don't feel anything except relief. All right?
Okay. We missed you at the funeral, Jess. I'll see you around.
Will you judge me? Huh? You judge me? After all I did for you. You go to hell, Jake. Go to hell.
Okay, first of all, choices are being made in terms of the tone. Dan.
Yeah.
I was here with Mommy. Okay, dude. Take it easy.
Yeah. Also, this writing, sometimes I really think that Hollywood writers are all only children because this dynamic is not that Jess is the older one.
Yes, definitely. That's a great point. For sure. He's acting like you abandoned me as a baby, you know.
Right.
This is how he sounds, for sure.
That's also, if Mom wants a little brown liquor and a bone,
yes,
mind your own fucking business. She's grown.
Seriously, it's not your job to keep anyone out of her pants if she wants someone in them.
No, she's not your child. Fuck off.
She's a sexy lady. We saw her.
Yeah.
Also, how many alsos are we up to? Now there's a fucking wife. Like, there's the problem is when you introduce a character this late in the game, like they're trying to fill in so much. They're creating all of this backstory for this guy. And it's like, slow down. If he's going to be around for several episodes, and he is, like, some of this can be filled in later. Like, it's fine.
Yeah. You don't have to get the whole country album in on the first day. You could just start with a single song. That's fine.
Right. Anyway, Joe stops by Jake's room later with beer and snacks, and he cracks one and briefly recaps his encounter with Jess. Leave it to professionals. The end of the recitation is that Jess is only his half-brother, which... rude.
Yeah, really.
Joe says he doesn't mean that, but he thinks maybe he does. He's sick of reaching out and getting attacked in response, and he hates his mom for dying like that, because he always thought when he recovered from his anger at her, he would come and straighten out the relationship. But A, again, as we said, that was like over 2 years ago. And, you know, you had your chance, but... she took that away from him, is his interpretation of what has happened. And then he chucks his can against the wall of the motel room, and Joe gets up to comfort him. Clip 5.
Jake, look, I mean, you can't always prepare for everything in life, you know? Sometimes it just keeps coming at you, and you just have to duck and cover. You want another beer?
No.
Chips?
No.
We always get romantic at the funniest times.
Yeah, we do.
I mean, he turned down dip? What is wrong? Truly, he is stricken by grief. I just thought that was actually cute.
Yes.
I like them together always. So
yes, I agree. I mean, they have their torsos like fully pressed against each other when she's like, do you want some chips? Like, no, he doesn't want chips right now.
He thinks you're all that and a bag, so take your clothes off.
So the next day, Joe goes alone to the garage, and Jess is super hostile. She notices a framed photo on the counter of the two Hanson boys as kids, but Jess spits that it was a long time ago. So Joe says Jake loves Jess, and it's killing him that they're not getting along. But Jess has an answer for that, and it's more fucking backstory dump. Get ready. Clip 6.
Did he say that?
No, not exactly.
No. No, of course he didn't. He didn't tell you what's really going on, did he? He didn't tell you that when we were growing up and Mom was catting around all over town that I looked out for him. I was only 2 years older than him, but I took him on and practically raised him like he was my full brother.
I'm sure he was grateful for that.
Let me finish. Now, a couple of years after this picture was taken, we got into a jam. Broke into a store. Hell, we didn't have any money. We didn't have anything. We were a couple of poor kids looking for some cash. Well, somebody snitched. Said it was the Hanson brothers. And when the sheriff showed up, I said it was all me. He wasn't involved. I protected him. Well, I went on to juvenile hall. He went on to be all state. You see, and even after I did all that for him, the first chance he got, he ran out on me and my mother. He never gave a damn about anybody but Jake Hansen. Still doesn't. Now get out of here.
Okay. This backstory, it feels like when you start a story and then you like pass it around a circle and everyone adds it, because nothing in Jake's manner for this whole episode has given any indication that any of what Jess just said happened.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it seems like at some point Jake would have, you know, Joe would have asked, like, why is Jess so resentful of you? And Jake would have been like, oh, yeah, this thing happened where Jess went to fucking juvie for me. Like, what?
Right.
This comes out of, it just comes out of fucking nowhere.
Also, if you were doing the older brother thing, which was to eat shit for the kid, like, first of all, blame everything on Jake, who is younger. Hello?
Right.
So lower sentences. And then second of all, like, this is what you want. Like, if you're going to take the weight for Jake, what you want is for him to get out.
Right.
Be an all-state quarterback, get a scholarship somewhere, or just leave.
Right.
And also, why didn't you leave?
Right. But also, every time he's like, Mr. All-State, it's like, you're acting like he got out and like went in the NFL. Like, Jake has not had a great life either. Like, Jake is one degree more successful than you are, buddy.
Yeah. And wouldn't an all-state quarterback have certain scholastic requirements in order to keep playing?
Great point. Great point.
I'm pretty sure someone had to get his GED, and obviously there's nothing wrong with that, except that the script coordinator does not remember that things happened in the first season. I understand. We don't want to go back there either, but come on, guys.
Yeah, I forgot that too. So in the car later, Jake apologizes to Joe for, you know, the fucking the night before, saying he got carried away, but she purrs at him not to worry about it. It was great. But he's like, we weren't going to be in a relationship. And she's like, got it. It's fine. Even though before he was the one who definitely wanted to date her again. And she was the one who said no because of all the stuff with the baby. But whatever.
I don't think the show necessarily remembers that happened or wants to act like it happened 2 years ago.
Right. It was four episodes ago.
Yeah. Whatever. There were firearms involved. But sure. Let's just move. Like, we don't want to go back there either. So fine. No. Great.
Mm-hmm. So they just need to square things away with real estate and then they can leave. Jake hopes he will not have to talk to Jess in the process. Like, sure. But Jess is, of course, on the premises with Sam, who says most of it is mortgaged, but he knows someone who can sell the place and get them something. And Jake says the proceeds should go to Jess, who barks that he doesn't need Jake's charity, and then challenges Jake to take a shot at him. And Jake at this point loses it, and kind of who can blame him, like, just shut up and take the money, Jess. But whatever, this happens. Clip 7.
Come on, Jake.
No, wait, you're something you don't understand about me. I'm not looking for any angles. I'm not trying to put anybody down. I'm just trying to do what's right.
Right, Jake.
Wait, you don't understand that? You're my big brother. I always looked up to you. I always loved you, and believe it or not, I always will. So you just do whatever you want with this stuff, all right? You just do it, okay?
I gotta go. I'll see you, Sam.
Yeah, I'll see you.
Jake. I'm sorry. About a lot of things.
Yeah? And me too.
Maybe I'll give you a call sometime.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Okay. I was so distracted in this scene by close-ups of Grant Cho's bizarre dye job that has it's just like some Halloween thing that went wrong that I wasn't really following this closely. I didn't hate this denouement. I mean, it's just chess pieces moving, but I didn't hate it.
It's a little quick.
Mm. Yeah. I also love that it's like, oh, he, you know, sort of challenges the emotional bully. And then the emotional bully is like, I respect you. Let's hang out.
Okay. Right. But it's also a little funny that he's like, I love you and I always will. I love you so much. I've never told anyone you exist. Like, okay.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, this is just soap writing, but it's still funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
On to our A plot. Success brings out the worst in Allison while Michael tries his hand at insurance fraud. Oh, it's nice that he's expanding his portfolio. So
sure.
Allison walks into D&D for the first time since her big Century Award win to congratulations from everyone she passes. Her award looks like shit, by the way. You can see it in the visual aids. It's just like a hunk of glass, as Amanda
totally
calls it
accurate,
later.
Totally though. Like, do you remember the like wall of awards for the Better Call Saul branch openings? Mm-hmm. It's like those. Like, those things are always just like, all they do is attract dust.
Totally. I appreciate the accuracy, but it still must be said. Like,
it looks yeah. Like oh, no. Exactly.
So in the bullpen, she finds Billy and Brooke speculating about the day's drama, which is the board of directors are in Amanda's office waiting for Allison. So in she goes.
They're also just like lounging in Amanda's chair. Like, there is a seating area. Fine. But like, they're just hanging out, and I know you're the board, but maybe wait in reception since that's not Allison's office.
Right. Yeah.
Or the conference room, which is a set we have seen before.
Mm-hmm.
This is like just rude. I mean, hashtag justice for Amanda. But anyway.
Well, there's a lot of weird shit about this storyline, which we will definitely get
business,
to.
Business, 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 business.
Uh-huh. Starting with this. But so the only guy Fox wanted to pay is a Dr. Barnett. Because remember when Peter, remember him, took over the company, it was with a consortium of doctors. But anyway, he congratulates Allison on the award before getting down to business, 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 which is the board and clients are aware of who's been carrying the load during Amanda's treatment, and they want Allison to take over as D&D's president immediately. And Allison assumes he means temporarily until Amanda's back to 100%, but he's like, no, forever. And Allison's like, oh, okay. This is
Brandon Walsh. What?
Yeah. This is extremely illegal. And doctors mm-hmm. would know this. Like, you can't fire someone for being in cancer treatment.
Yeah. This is literally my first note. And then it was like someone that the outgoing president, illegally, by the way, didn't trust to get limo arrangements right is now the president.
Yeah.
What? Okay. Business, business.
Mm-hmm.
Also, it's Allison. Okay, I'm done.
I mean, there's no one else. I mean, the funny thing about this storyline is that, like, every time there's any, you know, whenever you're in a plot like this where there's all kinds of off-screen people or, like, people that are just around. And
bustling,
we talk about this sometimes.
Faxing on the balcony.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. You're like, what are all of these other people thinking about shit that happens? Like, you know, Billy and Allison are not the only two people doing campaigns at this company. Like,
no.
I just want one POV, like, scene from one of their peers who's like, her? Anyway.
Maybe all they're ever doing, bustling around in the background, is like sending out the resumes. That's what I'd be doing.
Anyway, we then join Michael in a lawyer's office, not talking to the lawyer about Amanda's extremely illegal termination, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
This guy's name is Ryan, comments that he had hoped to meet Michael's wife this time, but Michael claims since the accident, she has become agoraphobic. Extremely easy thing to check that it's not mm-hmm. true, by the way. But Michael produces papers that Ryan had asked for with Kimberly's signature or what he represents as such, and asks after a promised settlement. Ryan thought he had the deal all worked out, but the city's insurance company looked at it again and is saying that the car accident, remember that shit last season, was a long time ago. Yeah, it was. And There's no proof it was caused by road conditions. So Michael's trying.
What a fucking Trumpy grift that is, too.
So Michael's trying to get $1 million out of the city. Ryan says they will never pay it without a trial, but Michael says it's impossible to have one given how unwell Kimberly is, but wants to know what the city might give him to leave them alone. And Ryan guesses 200K, maybe 150. Michael decides he could live with that if he could get it within the week, which is
not how shit works.
But sure.
Legal. The show is usually a little better about having its shit bolted down in all of these regards, but it's sweeps, I guess, or like, well, we're heading down the road to sweeps. So,
yeah, we're heading. It's almost the end of the season for sure. So, yes, stuff has to be moved into position. Definitely. So then Amanda gets into the office, barking orders at Billy about sending Allison in to see her immediately and ignoring his attempts to get a word in edgewise about what has changed while she was gone, and instead just walks into what was her office to see Allison just sitting at the desk working with Amanda's dumb books still on the desk, by the way.
Yeah, I saw that.
Along with Allison's award seems to be the only thing she's moved in, because Allison really started immediately, as in before the board told Amanda she was demoted or fired. Like, this is how Amanda's finding out. No one has told her what's going on.
Oh, like, my God. Hello, lawsuit.
100%. Like, there's so many layers of this. It's like, not how shit works. You don't give someone else's job and then not tell the person they're replacing, oh, by the way, this is not your job anymore. Like, what?
Oh, my God.
So it's not great. Clip 8.
I'm glad to see you preparing for a meeting, but I'd appreciate it if you did it at your own desk. And take that garish piece of glass with you.
This is my desk, Amanda. I'm sorry, the board decided to replace you.
With you? I don't think so.
It's all in this memo. Again, I'm sorry, it's nothing personal. It's more about your illness.
I don't know what you used to pull this off, you dishonest, self-serving, pathetic drunk. But when I find out, I'm going to turn it around, cut you open like a rotten piece of fruit. And you, with your paws all over my things, I don't know who you are, but Brooke, you are dead too.
It's policy, Amanda. You know that rule. Messenger.
I will not be patronized by you.
Amanda, you need to get well. And when you do, there will always be a job for you here at D&D.
There sure as hell is, and you're in it.
I mean, it's Allison. Like, just let it play out.
Truly, she's gonna fuck it up.
Yeah, and then you're gonna sue the company into the ground and win.
Yep.
Go to lunch.
So Kimberly answers Michael's page to meet him in the lounge and apparently hear all about his latest wacky scheme. He got their residency sent to the Mayo Clinic somehow. So he's ending their rental on the beach house and just needs her signature on this paperwork she totally doesn't need to look at. And Kimberly is thrilled to sign. The only problem is they want to see them tomorrow. And he has patients, so he'll have to meet her there in Minnesota in a couple of days. And she whines that she would rather go together when he's free since they're going to be a team, but they expect to see her right away. And it'll give her time to scout out housing. And she expects the patient load is Amanda, but Michael hand waves that Amanda's terminal. Nothing to be done for her. Off he goes. And wow. Yeah, Kimberly clearly does not believe this. And poor Amanda staggers into her apartment in the middle of the damn day and calls Michael, saying he needs to get her out of there. And he tells her he's working on it and then tells a nurse to page Kimberly again and tell her to meet him at home. And so she does, having no idea what's happening. And turns out he's already packed her bag and is putting her in a cab to the airport immediately. Like, her cab literally passes Amanda's Porsche pulling up. And as Amanda gets out, Michael welcomes her to her quiet, peaceful retreat from the world. And she asks about Kimberly, and he tells her he took care of that. It's all over between them, and all he and Amanda need to worry about is getting her well. And Amanda, as they hug, is clearly starting to see she can't believe this shit. And the next morning, Michael wakes up on the couch and goes into the bedroom to check on her. She's sitting up in bed looking groggy. She's grateful to be there, but thinks she's still getting worse. He wants to initiate the second phase of the chemo they started yesterday, which I don't think you do it on back-to-back days, but okay. She rolls her eyes. She feels too weak. But he'll bring her right back to the beach house afterward. And then there's a knock at the door. It's Scott Schenkman from the insurance company. They're prepared to settle as soon as he talks to Michael's wife, which means it's time for a wacky scheme. He runs into the bedroom, covers Amanda's hair with a blanket, looks very natural. You can see it in the visual aids. And as he promises to explain later, he growls at Amanda not to say a word before letting Scott in. And Scott addresses her as Mrs. Mancini, and she's like, what the hell is going on? But she does look fragile and disturbed, as described by Michael. And I just want to point out that while this is the past, it's from a time when photography existed. Like, there would have certainly been photos of the survivors of this accident accompanying this insurance claim.
Mm-hmm.
Amanda and Kimberly are both white women, but otherwise, like, what? They don't look alike.
No, they don't. At all.
So Michael's like, are you satisfied? And Scott obviously just wants to get away from this poor woman, so he nods. And in the living room, Michael hopes Scott's through harassing them, and he says, yes, the settlement will come through right away. No, it won't, but
no,
sure.
It won't.
So then Amanda comes out. Clip 9.
I don't even want to know what that was all about. You are a sleaze. Which I kind of like, but I am not one of the victim girls, so don't try and pull anything like that on me again.
Which I kind of like is so great.
I know, but I love that she pauses. She's like, actually, I like that, but here's the point. And like, girl, you do not want to know. Plausibility, deniability is important.
Yeah.
It was around here that I started wondering, like, I mean, if I were Kimberly, I would check to make sure there was a Mayo Clinic, or that it, you know, wasn't the one from Airplane with the guy with all the jars of mayo.
Well, I like, mean, we'll get
I
to that.
I assumed all of that was bullshit, but then, like, later it becomes clear that actually there was something.
It's real. Yes, that's the crazy part. When she gets back, it's like, what the fuck? Yeah. So we'll get to that.
I mean, it's, you know, as I said in my notes, like, it's just really hard to plug into this plot. At all, when these machinations are so like, even for Michael, this is like a level of outre that we have not seen before. And for either of these two to be, I don't know, just this like variably suspicious from scene to scene, it, you know, I mean, yeah. I understand that it's a soap, but this soap is usually not this careless with it.
Yes, I agree. Over to D&D, where Billy goes in to bullshit with Allison, who has no time and needs to be left alone. She's been there since 5 a.m. trying to get all her shit organized and still has hours of work ahead of her. But Billy's there to give her a gift. The best day planner on the market. Oh, the past.
Oh, a Schmilo Schmacks. Good job, Billy.
Yeah, I joke. I do sometimes miss my old paper day planner. I had so many colored pens. Like, colored calendars and iCal, like, do I use them? Yes. Do I love them? Yes, but it's not the same. Like,
I still have a ton of colored pens. You find a way to work it into your life.
Oh, I do too. But, you know, enough about me. Allison's touched and apologizes for being short with Billy, and he offers to take some of her work off her hands, and she delegates. Clip 10.
And I want that done today, so you probably have to work late tonight. What?
Nothing, boss.
Yeah, motherfucker, she is. Like, I know it's her, but still, go do your work.
Yeah, wait for her to fuck up. It won't be long. Until then, act as if.
True.
There's also a dismissive beat it hand gesture in this scene. Like, Courtney Thorne Smith sort of like trying to suffuse herself with Amanda essence is amazing to watch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's kind of fun.
So then Michael brings Amanda back to the beach house looking fab in her black turtleneck and light wash jeans. One of her best looks, I have to say.
Yeah.
So gorgeous in a black turtleneck with that blonde hair. But
yes,
she also looks exhausted, of course. He says her next treatment is not for a week. And as he helps her onto the couch, she says she's never been in a worse place in her life and will never forget what he's done for her. And he says, clip 11.
This has been very strange for me.
I've always lived outside myself, manipulating my own and others' emotions to get what I thought I wanted. But I'll tell you now, absolutely honestly, I love you, and I'll do whatever it takes to help you survive this. Now, I better get you some dinner. I know you don't feel like eating, but it's important you do.
Michael, I know you feel something for me, and I might feel something for you, but please don't say you love me.
Amanda, there's no reason.
I mean it.
What's with the nuance?
Yeah.
Don't make my job harder, Locklear, please. Like, she really, I mean, that was like indie film realness.
Mm-hmm.
In this dumb plot line. I also love that she's like, I'll never forget what you've done for me. Like, oh, like, make you an accessory to an extremely obvious insurance fraud?
Right.
Like that? Neat.
Back in the office, Billy brings his work back to Allison, who closes the door to kiss him, but like, a peck at first. Clip 12.
What's that about?
That is thank you for everything. Thank you for working your ass off and for believing in me, for helping me to get sober, and most of all for being my friend.
You're very welcome.
It's amazing, isn't it? Look how far we've come.
Been through a lot. It wasn't that long ago I was knocking on your door and you were looking for a roommate.
She starts unbuttoning her shirt.
Opening my door and thinking you were pretty damn cute.
On Amanda's desk?
It's my desk now.
Well, nobody wants it after that. But,
no.
Yeah.
I mean, this is so corny, but at the same time, his giddiness is like, on Amanda's desk is like very funny.
But what if we knock over the books?
Dickens, not her Dickens, copy Dickens, of the Dickens, House Dickens. Of Mirth.
Oh.
The next day. Allison's trying to hand off three more accounts to Billy, but he wants to talk about their relationship. But he says, what happened on the desk? But, you know, clip 13.
I'm sorry I didn't send you flowers, but work comes first with me these days.
Don't get flip with me, all right? I just want to know what you want. Understand?
I don't want to lose my job, so I am trying to hit the ground running.
And run over me in the process.
I don't get it. I thought guys like sex without strings.
Yeah, it was great. And it meant nothing to me. But find yourself another toy.
All right. Since you can't handle us having a social life, I'll be going to the Advertising Association dinner tonight by myself. You'll need to work late to get those summaries on my desk by morning.
You know why you're stupid? Because you're pushing me away when you need all the help you can get.
Just one reason then. Okay. It's a start. It's a start.
If Billy Campbell said, you know why you're stupid to me, I think I would probably have to murder him where he stood. Like, you do not get to say that to me no matter what I'm doing. Like, no, dude.
All the help you can get. Slam. Oh, please let this end.
Then Billy's not at all working on those accounts, but rather at the beach house delivering Amanda's exit papers. She guesses he has what he always wanted. Now he and Allison are a team. And instead of disputing that, he asks how Amanda's feeling. He's starting to think her termination was unfair. I mean,
oh, word.
That's one word. Illegal is another one we both used earlier. Mm-hmm. But she says it was just business and that her time with D&D is in the past now. Clip 14.
I used to think that life was about work and about being somebody, but I guess I never realized that I was somebody just by being alive. So now I'm just trying to hold on to that.
This is another example of a time when the soap opera writing could come off super corny, but her great underplaying sells it. Like, yeah. It's such a nice moment. It's too bad it's opposite him because he gives her nothing back.
I was just going to say, this is like Megan Fox acting against the, you know, as yet unbuilt Transformer green screen. Also, yeah. It started out as this Cobra scene. Like, oh, this is really scintillating. HR.
Anyway, she thanks Billy for being human and he kisses her on the temple and heads out. And then at the hospital, Matt, in his one scene, finds Michael in the hallway with some patient paperwork for him review. Michael's in a reverie. He's not used to being in love. Matt is dubious about Michael being in love with another human being. So Michael, who has no friends, blurts that it's Amanda, whom he loves more than anyone he's ever loved, including Jane, which, like, this is the first anyone even notices that she hasn't been in this episode at all because Jane is boring.
No, I didn't notice that either until just now. Amazing.
Exactly.
I work here, AMA.
So as Michael's talking, Matt makes a succession of extremely creeped out and alarmed faces, which are in an octic, you can see in the visual aids.
Followed by a diptych of his bonkers hair, which looks like it was permed using a ring light. I don't know what is happening. I don't like it.
Yeah.
Help.
But at the end of this recitation, Matt's like, cool, but you're married, and Michael shoots back that Matt hates
also,
Kim.
Also, you're you.
There's also that. Michael shoots back that Matt hates Kimberly as much as Michael does. News to me that Michael actually hates Kimberly and hasn't just lost interest in her, which is what I thought was his state of mind, but okay.
Like, yeah.
Seems excessive. And also let's slip that he's just waiting for a payoff before he drops Kimberly, and Matt is like, payoff? But Michael's like, don't worry about it. Leaves. Matt's like, rrr. So then Michael gets home to the beach house, goes into the bedroom, walks through the whole house calling Amanda's name, but she can't answer because she's on the kitchen floor, barely conscious. And he picks her up and says he's taking her to the hospital. And just as they're walking out the front door, Kimberly comes in from the deck, all smiles and excitement because he, as we said earlier, he really did transfer their residencies to the Mayo Clinic and she really did have an interview there. Like,
that is so crazy.
What? But so she goes into the bedroom, which obviously Michael has not been in alone, and like smells a robe and starts inspecting things in the drawers. And clip 15.
This isn't mine. This is mine.
And then picks up a pill bottle from the nightstand.
Oh.
Amanda.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, and not good.
That's where we leave it. Yoikes. So let us close things up by naming our episode MVP.
Alice?
Yeah, for once. I mean,
I'm not sure anything that occurred was due to her inherent value, which is very small, but
yes.
She was doing a bunch of things like a boss, because now she is the boss.
Yeah, I mean, she got where she eventually wanted to end up somehow, so yeah. Allison, I agree. Least valuable player.
The board. Guys.
Yeah. Yeah, specifically Dr. Barnett, their apparently only speaking representative for this flagrantly illegal move of firing Amanda by proxy.
Yeah. And also, don't sit in her chair when you're about to do that to her.
Mm-hmm.
In her absentia. That's just, oh, Jesus. Yeah.
No. Sub least valuable player, Jess's beard.
Next time on Again With This, Kimberly and Michael split up. Amanda and Brooke team up, and Sydney sees Jess fucking everything up, but decides to shut up about it because nobody will believe her because Sydney. You might experience some grunge-wear-adjacent upchuck upon visiting our visual aids, which you can find for every episode of Again With This on our website, againwiththispodcast.com. That's also where you'll find a link to buy our very special 90210 book, which is available in all formats. To learn more, follow us on Twitter at AWT90210. For extra episodes, make yourselves at home behind our desks at patreon.com/againwiththis. Tons of bonus content, so join today. I'm hopelessly inept Mayo Clinic staffing coordinator Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is rejected precoital Tostito Tarrieto. I knew I couldn't get through that without laughing. She's on Twitter at Tar Ariano. And our producer is infamous flavor saver David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.
More rice, anyone?
Oh, God, I forgot that one.
Wow.